All right, welcome to another episode of Piecing It Together, the podcast where we take a look at a new movie and try to figure out what movies inspired it. And today on the show, we are going to be talking about Baby Teeth, a new movie, first-time film from director Shannon Murphy. It is a fantastic debut, something that just kind of came out of nowhere for me. I was not expecting this one, and it just kind of blew me away, and I'm really excited to talk about it with first-time guest Daniel Berrios, and we had a great conversation about this movie. We got into a lot of great, great puzzle pieces, and yeah, it's a fun one. So before we get into it, I do want to remind you, as always, to make sure you are subscribed to Piecing It Together on your podcast app of choice. You can rate and review us over on Apple Podcasts or Podchaser. Follow us on social media at Piecing Pod and join our Facebook group, Popcorn and Puzzle Pieces, where we continue the conversation about all the movies that we talk about on the show and so much more. So, without any further ado, I'd say let's get into this episode. This is our first one for July, and it's gonna be a weird month here on the show. I don't think it's gonna be quite as exhaustive as June was with episodes twice a week every week, but we've got plenty of movies to cover, plenty of movies to talk about, and looking forward to talking about as many of them as we can. So let's get into this conversation about Baby Teeth. All right, so joining me today, we've got Daniel Berrios. Daniel, how's it going, man?
It is wonderful, dear, in Texas. It's finally not 90 degrees outside. When I took out the trash, it was glorious. So I'm going to take that as a harbinger for how good the podcast is going to come out. Thank you very much for having me.
I like that. We're starting off with positivity. It's not always the easiest thing to do nowadays, but I'm very happy to hear that.
Absolutely. It's rough out there, man. But hey, you just got to take it one day at a time, right?
That's right. Well, Daniel, it is your first time here on Piecing It Together. And as I always like to do, I like to have my new guests introduce themselves. So why don't you tell our listeners what it is that you do?
Hey, everybody. My name's Daniel. I write for a website called Shuffle Online, hosted by the wonderful Catherine Gonzalez of Latinx mm-hmm. Lens, another great podcast that you should listen to as well. And I just, I do a couple reviews here and there. I've done some YouTube in the past. I've been interested in contributing online to movies since 2013, either whether it be my own blog or YouTube or Shuffle, and Shuffle's the newest incarnation. So yeah, I'm just trying to, watch movies, learn about movies as humbly as I can possibly be, because I know absolutely nothing.
Perfect. I kind of feel like that's the direction I come to all this from as well. So you're in good company here, Daniel. I came to this movie Baby Teeth like totally. I knew nothing about it going in. I just knew a whole lot of people said I should watch it, and then I absolutely loved it. Getting that out there right up here at the top of the show, and so I wasn't planning on an episode or anything, but I put out there that I want to do one, and immediately Catherine as well as Rosa, they both said Daniel should do it. Are you talking this movie up a lot? Is that what it is?
What the timing of it was, I actually wrote my review around the same time that you started putting out the call, and mm-hmm. with Baby Teeth, it was something that I only knew because I got the screener for it, and then I watched it and I ended up really digging it. It's my favorite movie of the month so far. I say that with the caveat that I haven't seen The Five Bloods yet, but I'm going mm-hmm. to get around to it. I've got a day off tomorrow. I can do it. But yes. Something about Baby Teeth. I really enjoyed how it took a story that, you explain this to somebody and it sounds familiar. They sort of have to ask, what's the hook of this movie? And well, the hook of the movie is just the way it's made. Just the cast, the performances, the direction, especially just it's a big example of movie being good because of how it's made, not necessarily what's in it. So yeah, as soon as I saw something going on about Baby Teeth and I really wanted to talk about it with somebody, and the only person I have is my wife who hasn't seen it, and then my cats, who, if I tried to have a conversation with my cats, I'd have to stop in the middle to get them food and stuff. So
that'd be a fun podcast. So
I love it. Yeah. All cats all the time.
Yes. I love it. Well, So yeah, I'm looking forward to talking about it now, and I completely agree with you that this is a story that we've seen things like it before, and I think that's going to come across in some of our puzzle pieces as we're going through. But it's just made so well. It's such a exciting debut from this director, and really a lot of the people, the star has really not been in that much before, and so I mean it's just great to see like really fresh talent putting this thing out there, and it's gonna be fun to talk about. So I think we might as well jump in and get into some puzzle pieces. What do you got for your first piece?
All right, I'm gonna go with kind of the obvious one that's at first glance. If you don't know what Baby Teeth is about, it's about this young teen, Mila, who's a 16-year-old Australian girl, and I don't know if it's spoilery to say that she has, screw it, she has cancer.
Spoilers are fine on this show.
And I'll explain why I hesitated there in a bit, but she has cancer. She's going to school one day and comes across this guy, this kind of ruffian older guy named Moses. Yes, Moses. For a second, I was about to say Miles, but I think I'm getting their like couple name crossed in my head.
Yeah.
But Moses played by Toby Wallace. Mila is played by Eliza Scanlon. And they have this sort of weird friendship at first that turns into kind of like a romance. And at first glance, you're thinking, okay, sick girl, romance, it's The Fault in Our Stars. Mm-hmm. And the reason I bring this movie up is it feels like Baby Teeth is sort of the anti-version of that. Sure. And what's cool about it is The Fault in Our Stars, to me, has more of like a realistic look to it. It looks kind of like suburbia. And it's got, you know, kids in a church basement, like listening to like cancer stuff. Mm-hmm. But the way they talk about it and the way they address the actual thing itself, there's nothing in Baby Teeth that reminds me of something like there's just little infinities, then some infinities are bigger than others, kind of this flowery metaphor. Baby Teeth is more, even though I feel like there's a little bit more stylized there, it's kind of like a slightly hyper realized society, not in like a sci-fi way, more in like, you know, the colors are slightly more saturated than normal. You can definitely tell that this isn't an like our world with our regular story. You know, not many people have this specific thing happen to them, or even like at most two of these specific things happening to him at the same time. So it's definitely heightened in that sense. But the way that the characters actually talk about the illness and the way they actually talk about their problem seems more realistic to me. Mm-hmm. They're not really coding it in metaphor. They're just kind of living their everyday life. So even though their situation is stranger than the one in A Fault in Our Stars, the way they talk about it seems more real to me. And so I thought there was kind of like an inverse going on there.
Sure. Yeah, I can totally see that. And I think that that's definitely one of the main appeals, like, you know, and I'm sure this is going to come up a few times throughout this conversation, but the telling someone about the movie when they've maybe seen a movie that this reminds them of a little bit, but you're like, no, but it's a little bit something more than just that, you know, because it's like, it really does feel like something a little bit special. It feels like something that, like you said, it is kind of heightened in a way that I wouldn't go as far as to say like going into like twee category or anything like that, but it's interesting and unique, and these are really interesting characters, and everybody is so well fleshed out, and you really get such a sense of all of these people, and they all have their issues, and they all have their interaction with each other in different ways, and it's really just a really well put together thing. I think there's so much to gain from these characters.
That's really what it is. In the movie, I feel like the movie is based on a play, I think, by the same writer of the film. Rita Kalnajay. I'm sorry if I'm pronouncing that wrong, but it definitely, you can kind of tell The Fault in Our Stars was based off of a novel, because some of these stories will kind of like just explain everything to you. And what I loved about Baby Teeth is that it's very much a vignette movie. It's kind of breaking things up. You don't need to know, you don't need to be spoon-fed everything. That's why I said it was kind of like a spoiler, because the beginning of the movie is just boy meets girl. Mm-hmm. And you don't really learn about the cancer until maybe 20 minutes in. And then suddenly there's like a little bent that that takes on. And that, you know, that plays to real life. Like, you don't meet somebody and go, "Hey, David, my name's Daniel. I've got terminal cancer." Like, you don't really address that to people. Some people may do, some people may don't. But
this would be an interesting podcast today.
It would be an amazing icebreaker. Like, the worst, like, you go to work at a new job and they're like, "Hey, tell us something about yourself. Well, have I got a story for you? And does anybody have good bone marrow?" Just putting that out there. But yeah, there's something more realistic in the way these characters come across. And I think most of that is from the writing, which just seems to strip away the fat and go really into what these characters are all about, the struggles they're going into, but also the performances, because these actors, I mean, Ben Mendelsohn does so much with a mustache and sad puppy eyes that just better than most just filmographies, in my opinion.
Oh, he's so good in it. He is so good. Well, I will jump into my first puzzle piece. And this was I think the Fault in Our Stars absolutely is an unavoidable one when it comes to talking about this movie. And I think this is as well. And that is 2015's Me and Earl and the Dying Girl, a movie that I feel like everybody loved when it came out, and now maybe it's getting a little backlash, it seems like. I don't know. I feel like when you bring this movie up, people are like, "Oh, that." And it's like, I don't know. I only saw it the one time when it first came out. I remember liking it quite a bit. I think it's a really sweet story. I think the performances, I mean, Olivia Cooke's great. I thought everybody in it is great. I think, you know, it's definitely got a little bit of a quirkiness to it and everything like that. And, you know, and it's very sentimental and all that, but then it's also really fun and sweet and funny. And fun is a weird word for a movie about a young girl dying of cancer, but I mean, it really does seem to ride that line really well. And I feel like these three movies really kind of fit like their own little subgenre in a way, and are a really great place to start this whole thing.
Yeah. It's weird that the sick teen subgenre is now a subgenre of the coming of age genre, which, I mean, I think the last decade has been the best decade for this type of movie, point blank period. Like, more so than the 80s, I'd argue, because there's just so many specific different stories that kind of like found their own place in the way we kind of like grow up as people. And I think with Me, Earl, and the Dying Girl, thinking about that movie, thinking about Fault in Our Stars, that word quirky, I heard another podcast describe Baby Teeth that way. And I wouldn't necessarily call Baby Teeth quirky, but more wry and sort of sly. It's a darker kind of sometimes almost gallows humor about it.
Sure.
Especially with the way the parents, who, spoiler alert, are not the best parents in the world. There's this great scene when they're sitting there like, "We are like, this is the worst fucking parenting in the world, right?" And they're kind of laughing about it. That kind of tone is really what separates, I think, Baby Teeth apart from other movies that are kind of like either based on a novel or more approaching the kind of like, we're trying to handle cancer, which is such a delicate subject, with kind of like this fun entertainment side of it. Whether it being kind of like the cute flowery metaphor, or like the guys that are making parodies of like popular movies with like pun titles, like that kind of stuff. I guess it's just a different approach. And I know some people that like something like Fault in Our Stars and Me, Earl, and the Dying Girl, they may look at this and may think, are there more jokes to this?
Sure. Yeah.
Does it move a little faster? Are there more pop songs? Because the movie does have kind of its own kind of easygoing pace. But if you're kind of looking at Me, Earl, and the Dying Girl, and you're just kind of like, "I'm not really vibing with how humorous this is all the time," I think Baby Teeth might be a little bit more tempered down. Mm-hmm. But yeah, it just depends on your taste, I guess.
For sure. For sure. I love also one more point on that. As far as like the parents, you know, not necessarily being the greatest parents in the world. And I think the thing that I like the most about this movie is how it ultimately becomes about like the priorities of the situation, of like, you know, this girl is dying. Let's just ignore the fact that she's with a 23-year-old drug addict, you know, boyfriend, and even though she's 15. And like, I mean, it's just, I just think that that's so, it's so, it's crazy, but at the same time, it's just, it's kind of right in the moment for these people, you know?
Yeah, and are we in full spoilers at this point?
Yes, absolutely. Okay, cool. I am fully okay with the spoilers as okay, our listeners.
Cool,
know.
Because this is something that as soon as you hear it, I think the screenplay actually works really well to navigate that point, because as soon as you mention the whole age gap, immediately, like in my chest, like, you know, your butt tightens a little bit.
Right.
It's
right.
Like, oh, I don't know how I feel about this. I like the scene where she's trying to lie about his age, but he's fully open with it. I don't even know if he knew her age at that point. He's not hiding this because he doesn't need to hide it. It hasn't gone in a weird... I never really get a predatory vibe with Mo. And again, I know that's something that we don't, you know, we don't need to be blind to.
Sure.
But I think the movie's smart in the way it handles exactly what steps he takes with her. As terrible as it is, I had to look up the age of consent in Australia. And it turns out, like, on the night of her 17th birthday, which is the legal age of consent, that's when she has sex for the first time. I can't imagine that's a mistake. I can't imagine that's an oversight that has to be... playing into, I guess, an overall theme in this movie about the kind of gray areas of life, the transitional areas of life that, you know, this, I think I put some of this in my review, but the phrase high school never ends. Mm-hmm. And that's kind of why I love that the parents in this movie are not just the parents dealing with the kid, but the parents dealing with their own stuff. Because the stuff that plagues you as a teenager will ultimately follow you into adulthood. Some movies will take that as a curse. In Baby Teeth, I kind of found that as a little bit of hope. That, you know, it's not that you have to have everything figured out by the time that you're old enough to have a 16-year-old daughter, but that you're consistently growing.
Sure.
And so that idea of, like, you know, shedding your baby teeth. You know, the baby teeth pop out in the bloody water. It's like, it's bloody, it's violent, it's not really gross, but it's necessary for growth. And I think that movie's addressing set too.
Yeah, absolutely. I love that. So what do you got for your next piece?
My next piece is sticking with the vibe. I think I was tweeting about this and I was like, it's like Greta Gerwig meets Jim Jarmusch. So my next one is a Jim Jarmusch movie called Patterson.
I'm not an
aficionado on Jarmusch, but this is the first movie of his I saw. And what I love about it, and I kind of what I love about Baby Teeth 2, is that kind of matter-of-fact, lackadaisical pace that's going on. It's not that really point A means point B and such. You're just kind of picking moments of these characters' lives. And through that, you kind of start to figure out what they're about, what that means to them. And with Patterson, it's so much a movie about just kind of like hanging back and watching the day in this guy's life. There's not really a big interaction. It doesn't feel like Jarmusch is playing God with Adam Driver and just throwing random shit to see what sticks. It just feels like this is just a day, a week in Adam Driver's life that just so happens to have a couple of like weird, crazy situations.
Sure.
So with Baby Teeth, I guess part of this being a play where they have these little titles before each scene, where like one can be Isolation, one could be When Mila Met Moses. When Moses Met Spaghetti was one of the titles. And then my favorite title, which is Fuck This. You know, like as soon as you read that, it is presented as a joke, but you understand that like, oh, this is the part where, you know, we talk about this moment in her life or this moment in her life. It's not necessarily driven by a typical, I guess, third act structure. And so I like that sort of slow moving kind of just hangout movie, you know, something like a Richard Linklater's films have, you know, I feel like that would be appropriate comparison.
Yeah, no, I think that that's a really interesting one. And I could totally see where you're coming from with a lot of that. And I think that, you know, this movie, the way that you get all these little slices of really, I mean, all four of these major characters, and you really get so much of a wide range of knowledge of who these people are. I mean, it's a really well done thing to be able to know so much about these characters when it's not just about any given one of them. I mean, it really goes in so many different directions so many times, and yet it doesn't feel like anybody is cheated of their moments to like really get to learn about them.
Exactly. And I like that each person in this film gets a time to be quiet and to be alone and kind of stew. I also like that there are some things. Do we ever really learn why Essie Davis's Anna stopped playing the piano?
No, I don't know the specific.
And that feels appropriate to me because, again, if I walk into a room for the icebreaker, even if I've known you for a few months, that might not be something you're ready to put out. And that's right. Okay. You just know that there's some kind of baggage holding on. And I think with regular narrative structure, we've kind of been expected to try and learn every single thing in 2 hours at once. And sometimes it's good to just, especially in a movie that's trying to treat these subjects and these people as kind of real as possible, given, you know, the crazy circumstances they're in, it's good to leave some pieces of information out. It's good to just kind of treat people like regular people.
For sure. So I will go to my next piece, and I don't know. I think this one might be a little bit of a stretch maybe, but I thought of the 2016 A24 film American Honey from director Andrea Arnold. I thought, first of all, on two different levels, I thought of this movie. First of all, Moses just felt like he could have been a character right off the bus in American Honey. I don't know if you're familiar with that movie.
I haven't seen it, but I know, like, I remember that trailer, and I know that vibe, and it fits perfectly.
Okay.
Like, it's very easy to see Moses being played by, like, Shia LaBeouf with a rat tail.
Totally. Absolutely. He's got a lot of Shia energy in this thing. And so, yeah, I mean, there's that. And then also, I feel like when Millie is getting out, essentially, we don't know if it's her first time really getting out. But I mean, she's young and there's really probably wasn't that many opportunities for her to get out, you know, having cancer and everything and being still in high school. So when she's getting out and being introduced to this like just crazy youth fun nightlife situation, you know, it's just kind of like her getting brought into this just crazy high energy world. And it's a little bit reminiscent of just I kind of feel as the audience member going into this world that American Honey kind of takes you into, where it's just like, you're like, man, these young kids are pretty crazy nowadays, aren't they? You know, just watching them party and doing the shit that they do, you know. And
man, so these kids out here just wilding.
I'm getting my old man energy into this episode, I guess. But I just felt a little bit of that going on, especially though some of that Shia LaBeouf feeling of the Moses character. It's the kind of down and dirty character that guy would play.
I don't know if it's me, but Wallace is like my MVP of this movie, Toby Wallace. He's just got such a vivacious energy to him. And I mean, shout out goes to the costuming and the wardrobe for this, because immediately he sticks out. He's got this rat tail in the back and he's got these short shorts that like one sneeze and the nuts are out, and it's just terrible. But you look at this guy and he is so genuinely sweet. Like, you really see this baby face puppy dog look to him, but he's also can be really just messed up. Yeah. And you have this feeling of this like eternal fuck up going on.
Right.
That no matter what he does or what his best intentions are, he's always going to find the worst way to do that. And so that consistent, like, God, I want better from you and you're showing me better. I just love that adrenaline that performance brings. And I guess that's the energy I bring to it. Zone with American Honey, though, that I think that there's definitely a vibe there too, that you from what I've heard of American Honey, it's one of those movies where it's technically like our world, but it's so crazy that you can't quite believe it. And I feel like Deep is kind of in that way too, that sort of like truth is stranger than fiction thing.
Sure.
So there might be a little bit of that in there too.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So what do you got for your next piece?
I mentioned Gerwig, so I'm bringing out Lady Bird. I know. Cool. The internet's going to be like, all right, fine. God, stop talking about Greta Gerwig for 5 minutes. I promise I won't take that long. For me, it's just the mother-daughter relationship that I found between Eliza Scanlon's Mila and Essie Davis's Anna. And I haven't seen Essie Davis in a lot, like since Babadook. It's bizarre to me. I don't know if she's doing a lot in Australian film and we just happened to get, you know, the few exports, but whatever. That sort of contentious relationship. And while I felt in Lady Bird, it was very much Saoirse and Laurie were basically playing the before and after of each other in a sense, or maybe like Saoirse sees, I will become her in the exact same spot if I don't make these tweaks there. And Laurie Metcalf's just like, well, you're making these tweaks that I'm really scared of because I wanted to make those tweaks, but I never did. And I just want what's best for you. I'm scared that you'll end up in a worse place than me, that sort of thing. But I really like that in Baby Teeth, they are separate people. I never got the vibe that even though they were fighting, even though they, I don't really know what Anna wants for Mila other than for Mila just to plain old be happy. And Mila just wants to kind of live her life and embrace the stuff that I guess Anna is a little, is just too anxious, or, I mean, rightfully so. She's got a daughter who's dying. And so that kind of stuff would knock out all the creative energy out of you to, you know, not want to play the piano anymore. And I like that in a way, because she's lost that for herself. She doesn't want Mila to lose it. So she's like forcing it on her. And that's why I love the scene where Mila like has the violin and just yeets it across the room. Yeah. I don't even know if it like got a dent or in there or something, or if she like broke a string, but that sort of contention, that relationship, I thought was kind of reminiscent. And also this idea of, I think Shannon Murphy's just got a strong vision of what she wants with this movie. And with Gerwig, that was apparent. Sure. Like as soon as I saw Lady Bird, I saw the shots that she chose. I saw the pace. I felt the way she framed and blocked, that stuff just drew to me. And one of the things I really loved in Baby Teeth, that part at the end when Anna is crying in Moses's arms, there's a shot that's like shot from wide away and it's a handheld shot. So it's kind of shaking, but it's shaking like a lot to the point where it almost would be too much. And then I was reminded of something that John Favreau was talking to Martin Scorsese about in Casino. There's a shot where like Sharon Stone is crying and Robert De Niro is consoling her, and there's a camera bump. And that's a technical mistake. Like that's an error. But Murphy, like Scorsese, just focuses on performance. That emotion is strong enough that, you know, it could be that she's just holding the camera and getting lost in her own, you know, seeing these people cry it out. And it really could have been affecting them. I don't know that for sure, but I like the, I guess, courage a director would have to see a shot that may not be pristine, may not be perfect, but because the emotion is so raw and heartfelt and it really like tears your soul inside out, that's the take you keep in the film.
That's exciting for a debut filmmaker to do something like that. Yeah, that's how you know someone's electric and has something to say, you know?
Absolutely. So what do you got, man? So
I'm going to go for my next one. So this one is more there's a feeling I think that connects as well, but it's mostly for a specific scene. And that's Sofia Coppola's The Virgin Suicides.
I was thinking that too.
Were you? leaving her in the middle of the night, and you're just like, what the hell? You know, what are you doing?
So rough.
Yeah.
Oh man, especially like the next morning, you just see her get up, and what I loved about that scene when she's dancing. You kind of touched on it earlier, like it's her first time in this world, but I think it's her first time in this world where her experiences are like purely her own.
Sure.
And she's truly like experiencing a new thing without the influence of Moses or her parents who are trying to push her one way or whatnot. And the shot I love when she's like making out with that one person under all those like disco lights or whatnot. That to me kind of symbolized the whole, like, this is her first step into adulthood, so to speak, sort of maturity. Sure. And then that morning comes and she's a little kid again, terrified, alone, and your heart just goes out because, like, Moses, you piece of shit, what were you doing?
What were you doing? And you know that guy's, his heart's in the right place, but he can't do the right thing. He just simply can't.
And I love, again, another great choice of not showing us everything. We never really see what happened that night.
He claims he went back, but you just don't know.
You absolutely don't. And that kind of keeps that mystery, and you don't really know where he's coming at truly.
Yeah.
You don't know whenever Henry finally like confronts him and says, look, I can get you drugs, come home because it's good for her. Like, again, you don't ever really know if he loved her to that point. Maybe afterwards he realized whenever she passed and whenever, you know, all that kind of emotion has come back up. Maybe he realized that he did truly love her. But I always love that mystery. And so, yeah, that shot, that scene was like, oh my God.
Yeah. And after such a... you know, we were talking about it during that last piece about just how, you know, just how much energy there is to that whole sequence of her going out and into this world of, you know, just exciting youth culture and everything. And she's experiencing it for the first time and just having this just incredibly, insanely fun time for the really kind of the first time ever. And then for it to just end that way, it's like, there's, you know, and you know that she's got this kind of cloud over her anyway, just because of, you know, her condition. And it's like, just those two levels of having such an amazing time with that, knowing that it's not going to end, nothing ends well, you know?
Yeah, that's the kind of fleeting moment of it all. I mean, and to make the matters worse, like, he helped her get out of that situation where she's getting wasted and she's throwing up because, of course, you know, your first time chugging too much vodka, you're gonna mess up. And that ends in such a sweet place. And to see that go back, that back and forth, I think, got a little bit more violent as the movie went along. And so at a point where I thought, like, oh man, this guy's might be irredeemable, the movie somehow finds a way to bring you back to his side. And that's such a lesson in empathy that it's really hard to nail, especially on a debut.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So what do you got next?
Okay. This is my last one. Okay. And this one is About Time by Richard Curtis. I chose it because I feel like Baby Teeth is one of those movies that doesn't necessarily jump genre as wildly as About Time does, but you start out the movie, it's like a boy meets girl, kind of like a cute teen romance thing. And then you've got like, it's a sick teen movie. And then you're like, no, you're talking to the parents too. So it's kind of just like a regular family drama, but then there's like a dark comedy element to it. And so it's kind of bouncing around between a lot of these feels of what the movie could be. It's never really just one thing, but ultimately ends in, I guess, a more of like a, I guess with the lesson that's a little bit more human, or like a theme that's a little bit more like universal. And I feel like About Time is the same way. You get introduced to it as kind of this sci-fi rom-com where, you know, it's Donald Gleason figuring out he can travel backwards and forwards and time within his own life, and then he uses that to fall in love with Rachel McAdams, and that in any other movie that would just be it, but that's only half of the movie, and then the rest of it is dealing with time travel as your life progresses. It's asking the question, like, you know, what happens after you get the girl? And that part is so fascinating to me, and it ultimately ends up, I guess, being more again of this sort of like universal theme of dealing with love and dealing with time and dealing with, you know, what are you going to do with that time? I feel like Baby Teeth is tapping into some of that too, tapping into, like, again, growth, kind of like how you're going to use the time that you have, how you're going to love the people that are around you, that kind of thing.
Right.
So I feel like if your heart is shredded to pieces at the end of Baby Teeth, you watch About Time as a, like a chaser, and I think you'll be back to even again.
I actually have never seen it, so I might have to. I might have to watch that one of these days.
That was one where it was Catching Fire weekend, and I looked at the tickets, and I was like, there is no way I'm going to be in here with 1,000 screaming fans for a movie that like I've never read the book for, and I'm not going to be like leaning and cracking my neck to see the screen. So I was like, you know what? Let me check this About Time thing out. I've never, like, whatever, screw it. And then I walked in, and that movie blew me away. I mean, Bill Nighy in that movie will make you cry. Donald Gleason is better than he's ever been. Rachel McAdams is one of our finest actresses, point blank period. And you've got like a young Margot Robbie in there too. And just, it's got that, you know, if you're a big fan of Richard Curtis's movies, the whole Love Actually is of the world, that movie fits his oeuvre, but I think it's achieving so much more with surprising elements. Again, it's travel movie. It's sci-fi, but yeah, definitely one you recommend. I recommend that to you wholeheartedly, man.
Nice. I'm going to have to check that out. It sounds great. So, all right, I got my last piece here, and it's one we actually just did on the show just recently as a full episode of our Missing Pieces series. It is Garden State from Zach Braff. I think that there's a lot going on in this movie, what with, you know, medications, people wanting to get off of medications, people wanting to, you know, get better. There's also the dad who is the psychiatrist prescribing medications for people.
That I just think that, you know,
yeah. And then on top of that, also there's a fantastic soundtrack, just lots of great music in this movie. That's which true. I think usually when I think of movies from the last 20 years especially that have great soundtracks, I mean Garden State is just a classic, you know.
Again, one that's a blind spot to me, but I see the vibe. Is Don't Panic is playing in my head right now, and
for
that's
sure.
What is going on. But yeah, definitely the whole medication thing is such an intriguing turn, because it's one of the movies that, you know, you see 16 movies like this. I don't think I've really seen many movies address the opioid crisis that we're all in.
Right, right.
And I guess the, you know, I work at a pharmacy, and seeing just the sheer amount of people that are on stuff like Xanax and Valium and Klonopin and all that stuff, it's kind of like, wow, this stuff is, it's so much quieter. Nobody really talks about it in the way they do other drugs, but, you know, this stuff does really affect people, and it does kind of, if handled incorrectly, can really be a problem. So I like that this movie just kind of casually tossed it on in there. Like, yeah, this is the thing that happens. And in the weirdest, like, strangest scene possible, like, she's got Xanax and they're fucking on top of his table. And you're just like, what is happening, man? But, you know,
that's an introduction again, right there.
Absurd. You found some nuggets of truth, and I like that. So how is Garden? What is Garden State? I've never actually known what the movie's about.
Garden State is a movie that kind of like I was saying earlier with me, myself, and Earl and the Dying Girl.
Me, myself, and Irene.
Me, myself, and Irene. It's a movie that like people really have gotten down on over the years, even though everybody loved it when it came out. But you know, I mean, I think the reason people don't like it is because it's written, directed, and starring Zach Braff, and it's clearly just like such a like a vanity piece. And it's also like a kind of, this movie is going to be the voice of the generation kind of a movie, and to write that for yourself and direct that for yourself, you know what I mean? It's just a big lofty goal to really like shoot for on your debut, you know? And I think that kind of maybe rubs people the wrong way, but I mean, it's basically, yeah, right. I mean, basically it's about a guy who, you know, is on all kinds of medication written by his dad. His dad is his psychiatrist, and he goes home for his mom's funeral, who has been paralyzed all his life, and he just doesn't feel anything about it, but he has to go back. And through reconnecting with old friends and meeting a new person, kind of like learns to like let go and start to, you know, enjoy life again, like that kind of a thing. And it's an all right movie. I think it's good. And I mean, if nothing else, the soundtrack is fantastic.
When you were addressing the medication thing, there's that element in Baby Teeth that's really interesting to me, is the Mendelsohn trying to craft the family that he doesn't have. You know, there's the obvious, you know, him going out, hanging out with the pregnant girl, and then they eventually make out at one point because there's that weird, like, sexual tension between them. But there's that line that Mila says when she's like, oh, you've been doping her up so much. Like, you're trying to make her normal. And that feeling of, like, you're trying to fix the other people around you to fix your own life, that kind of abuse in that way. Everybody's abusive to each other in some way, shape, or form in this movie. I think Mila comes out unscathed. But you can argue, like, her sneaking out in the middle of the night and, like, using this boy as kind of, like, revenge against her parents or her the life she has, potentially. I don't know. But that specific kind of abuse is just, again, something that I hadn't really seen in film. And again, you know, maybe I need to see Garden State and open myself up. But yeah, I just hadn't seen that before.
So I think I'm going to go ahead and do the finish puzzle, and we'll get into some closing thoughts about Baby Teeth. We talked about The Fault in Our Stars, Me and Earl and the Dying Girl, Patterson, Lady Bird, The Virgin Suicides, About Time, and Garden State. I think a great list of movies. Of course, we got in there all of the dying teen subgenre. We definitely fit them all in, and that was necessary. You know, anybody who hasn't seen the movie, obviously we've gotten into spoilers for Out. You should have watched it first, but anyone who hasn't seen the movie, just, you know, yes, I think it fits squarely into that subgenre, but at the same time, like we've been saying through this whole thing, I mean, I really think this movie has a little bit more on its mind, and I think it's just so well crafted. It's so well acted. I mean, every one of these main four actors, I just think, is just top of the line, just really some of my favorite stuff I've seen this year. It's also got great music to it, great score. It's, you know, it's funny when it wants to be, even though it's a heavy movie as well. But I just think I couldn't recommend it enough.
I echo pretty much every single statement here. This is the best ensemble I've seen currently this year. Again, haven't seen The Five Bloods, so don't come at me yet. But for me, Toby Wallace is like my supporting actor right now. I think that kid is electric, and I want him to be in every single movie. Eliza Scanlon, I hadn't seen Little Women yet, but she in this one, there's just like, she makes it look effortless. There's such a range, and I love how bratty she can be. Like that part where she's like sticking out her tongue to her mom, so like mocking her behind her back, and the way she really gets into it, like a teen would. I just like all these little moments. Again, Essie Davis and Ben Mendelsohn. Who knew I needed that couple in my life? Those people, fantastic character actors abroad. Even the side people. You know, the pregnant chick we mentioned earlier, the music teacher,
even
the one girl in the bathroom whenever she's wanting to ask Mila about her wig. I thought she pulled her performance off well as too. It shows to me that Murphy has not only a strong eye for just how the movie should be paced and how the movie should look, but also how to direct these actors. And again, from a debut, this is a feature debut. That's stellar, and I am just ecstatic to see what she has next for us.
Before we wrap this thing up, is there another movie you saw recently that you really loved that you'd like to recommend to our listeners?
Let me grab Letterboxd here. I rewatched Airplane for a while back. This has been a weird month for plane movies. Oh, I saw Top Gun for the very, very first time the other day, and that movie is... It's dumb as hell, but I really loved, I fell in love with Tony Scott with that movie because I'd only seen Deja Vu beforehand. No True Romance, No Man on Fire, nothing. And Top Gun, I just loved the way that man would just frame a shot. Like there's something, I think like Tom Cruise is standing in the locker room and he's getting chewed out by one of the officers. The officer walks away. Tom Cruise walks away. And the camera move that follows Iceman into the next shot is smooth like butter. And it's one of those things that, like, if you're paying attention, you're just like, oh my God, this man knows what he's doing and I want more. So even a stupid, sometimes jingoistic movie like Top Gun right. can be made amazing by a great director. So I credit Top Gun with turning me on to a new face that I'm excited to follow. So yeah, if you've never seen Top Gun, go check that out.
I actually haven't seen it since I was, I don't know, probably 8 or something like that, you know, so it's on my list to rewatch before that new one comes out, if it ever comes out, because who knows what's happening with the world, but that's another story.
Yeah. That trailer looks great though.
It like, sure does.
He knows how to do a trailer right.
You know what? I don't necessarily need to see Tenet in IMAX, but I do need to see the new Top Gun in IMAX.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I'll watch Tenet on an iPhone. That's fine.
I'll watch Tenet
on like a digital Etch-a-Sketch if possible. But I don't know. Something about those plane shots in Top Gun are just so glassy. I love it. Oh, it's like watching a tech demo.
Oh, can't
wait. Hopefully the movie's better than a tech demo.
Yeah, I hope so too. So Daniel, where can people find your work?
They can find me on shuffleonline.net. I should have a couple reviews coming out there pretty soon. And you can follow me on Twitter at Daniel Berrios. That is Berrios 93. And if you want to yell at me or recommend Tony Scott movies, go ahead and tweet me that too.
Love it. Awesome. Well, hey, thank you so much for doing the show. It was a great time, and maybe we'll get you back one of these days.
I would love to. This has been awesome, man. I greatly, greatly appreciate it. Thank you very much for having me on.
We're queer.
We're geeks.
We're queeks.
Superheroes, Star Wars,
Broadway, Drag Race.
So if you're super gay,
super nerdy,
or anything in between, listen to Queeks today.
Wherever fine podcasts are sold.
And find us on Instagram at Queeks Podcast.
All right, so I hope you enjoyed that conversation about Baby Teeth. Definitely seek out that movie if you haven't seen it yet. Really, really great. It's out now on VOD. I wish I had gotten to see it in a theater. I don't know if it was ever even planned for theaters. The way things are now, I don't know that anything is planned for theaters anymore. But, you know, it is what it is. We're living in this world that we're living in. And as long as movies keep coming, I'm happy to get them however we can get them. Don't forget to check out our top 10 movies of the year so far special episode that came out last week. It's a fun one with Josh Bell. We get into a lot of great recommendations there. And as always, thank you so much for listening. You can make sure you are subscribed to the show on whatever your favorite podcast app is. And if you want to support the show, just share us. We really appreciate it when you share our episodes. You could also rate and review us on Apple Podcasts or Podchaser. You can also go check out our Patreon where we post advanced episodes and, you know, throw a couple bucks that way if you want to. But mostly, we're just happy you're out there listening, and we really appreciate it when you share the show. So make sure to do that and follow us on social media at PiecingPod. So we got plenty of piecing it together coming your way, but July is going to be a bit of a weird month as I focus most of my time on finishing up my next album. But before I play you more from the next album, which I've played a couple of tracks here and there at the ends of shows, some of the new stuff that I've been working on, let's go to my most recent album, Beater, original motion picture soundtrack, which, if you've never heard of it before, it is the film score for a movie called Beater that's coming out later this year that I scored, a feature film. And then combining that with a whole bunch of music from other films that I scored for the same director. 34 tracks in total, an hour and 45 minutes of music. It's pretty much a six-year collection of music, just a lot of stuff that I've done over the years, and I'm really proud of it. A lot of stuff on there that I just think I'm really happy to release in an album format, and it's a collection of so many films that I worked on, you know. So I'm gonna play a track off that, and this is from actually a short film called To Cherish the Time, and the track is called My Love. And I'm going to close this episode out with this track, My Love. The album is Beater, original motion picture soundtrack. It is available wherever music is available. There's also a shortened 10-song playlist on Spotify with what I think is the 10 best tracks off the album. So if you just want to check it out, here's some of the stuff without getting into the extensive hour and 45 minute runtime. You can check that out over on my Spotify page. Search for David Rosen. But yeah, this is My Love. Thanks as always for listening, and we'll be back with more Piecing It Together next week.
An All Points West production, produced by David Rosen in Las Vegas.
Oh, you're back. Sorry, it cut out there for a second.
Yeah, no, I saw you smiling like a proud dad for a second. I was like, did I really like impress him? Like, holy shit, is he like?
That, I mean, I was just, I needed a moment, man. You know?